Hi everyone, my name is Pardis and welcome back to Med Made Real. For those of you newly joining, thank you for tuning into this episode. This is a podcast that highlights the life-changing aspects of medical treatments and procedures while giving people with lived experience a platform to share their stories. We are thrilled to be joined today by Dr. Darren Che, who is a neurotologist at the Ottawa Hospital and the University of Ottawa. He specializes in dizziness and vestibular disorders and founded the Ottawa Vestibular Program, which encompasses three multidisciplinary dizziness clinics, an educational curriculum that targets all levels of education, and a growing research program into chronic dizziness and vestibular migraines. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Che.
No problems. Thanks for inviting me.
Perfect. So first thing we usually like to start off on our podcast is just if you can tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe some of the work that you do at the Ottawa Vestibular Program.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm a otologist, so ear specialist at the Ottawa Hospital and the University of Ottawa. So I've been there for almost 15 years now. And over the past 10 years, starting from scratch, been trying to build this clinical, educational, and research program into all aspects of dizziness. It's been a long road and a lot of work, but we've managed to bring a lot of things and new programs into fruition, and hopefully helping people along the way. And so yeah, it's been exciting and gratifying work as well.
That's really great to hear. Speaking about people, who struggle with dizziness, not too long ago we had Teresa, who spoke on our podcast in a previous episode. She talked about her experience with vertigo. And I guess vertigo and dizziness are words that we hear commonly, like colloquially. Can you just explain maybe briefly what vertigo is and what are some things that might cause it?
Yeah, so I had to listen to that episode, and it was really, it's always hard to hear about patients' experiences, and maybe we don't hear enough about their experiences as doctors. But I have to say, unfortunately, her experiences are pretty common. Just in general, I mean, dizziness is just an English word that people are trying to use to describe this sensation that they feel, and that's one of the problems with dizziness is everybody experiences it differently and feels it differently and will describe it differently. And so trying to define it and put it into words, like, as doctors, we want a certain word to mean something. But unfortunately, a word like dizziness can mean hundreds of different things. And so same with the word vertigo. While it has a technical definition that is agreed upon, and that it's like a sensation of internal or external rotation or spinning or movement, lots of people will use that word differently, especially if they're not doctors or not ENT specialists, or so just saying that you have vertigo or you've been diagnosed with vertigo, unfortunately, doesn't really give much information. It just means you're feeling dizzy and that somebody told you that this is the word to use for it, or you read it somewhere, or you feel like that's the word because you read it somewhere. So it's hard to know. The words have a lot of meaning, but they're not that helpful in terms of trying to figure out what's causing somebody's dizziness.
Yeah, maybe that's a good practice to think about. Like, not everything needs to have a defined category and a defined definition. So, I guess from your practice working in a very specialized setting and, dizziness being something that can affect people very differently across the board, how does dizziness typically impact patients' day-to-day lives from what you've seen? And like, what kind of emotional or professional challenges might some people with dizziness have? Do you have any like patient stories that might highlight some of these experiences that you can talk about?
Oh yeah, every patient has a story similar to the patient you had on your last episode. The funny thing is, a long time ago, I was at a talk by somebody, and he was like, "You know what? When you're a kid, you actually seek the sensation of vertigo by going on roller coasters or spinning yourself around, or and you laugh and you find it fun. But unfortunately, as you grow up, that when you have that and you don't want it, then it becomes extremely intrusive. That's actually perfectly summarizes the problem with dizziness, is that it's a sensation that at other times you might actually find enjoyable or you're seeking out, but most of the time you don't want it. And so that's the big problem with it. And so I would say its impact on people's lives really depends on what stage of life they're at, but it does impact people at all stages, from children all the way up to the elderly. A lot of the in the elderly, the impact is about falls and making you fall and hurt yourself, maybe break a hip or something like that. Those are very catastrophic events to happen. Limit your mobility, isolate you at home. When you're kind of more working age, trying to raise a family, trying to hold down a job, you have to drive people everywhere. And so being dizzy all the time has significant impacts on how often you can do those kinds of things, participate in work and family life. And when you're a kid, might limit your ability to even like just go to school and get education and things like that, which obviously then impacts the rest of your life. So the impacts of dizziness can be extremely severe. And I guess the amazing thing about dizziness is that it is so common, so common. Must be one of the most common medical like symptoms that you can have. But it's so little is spoken about it, and so little research is done about it, and there's so little attention paid to it, considering how common a problem it is. So it's like way more common than cancer, for example. But
Right.
nobody generally dies of dizziness, so it just doesn't engender the same amount of, I guess, like research money and attention as things like cancer or things like that. But it's definitely, I would say, as impactful as cancer in many cases.
Right. And I think that's something that like a lot of people might not fully grasp the impact in its entirety, which I think is why it's so important to talk about it in this kind of light, because when you hear dizziness or like the feeling of dizziness, you're like, oh, okay, like it'll go away. Like, oh, they're just dizzy. They'll like, but sometimes people with dizziness will have that feeling for very, very long periods of times. Like Teresa was saying, I think it lasted a week for her, but I know there's patients that might have it for months, if not more. So definitely, I think something important to talk about and to really understand what the word means in its entirety.
We just had a patient this morning in our clinic who'd been dizzy for 30 years,
Oh my
and
God.
that
Wow.
person, and this patient was 60 now, so the person had been dizzy since they were 30, and
Oh.
all the time, 24 hours a day, every single day for 30 plus years. And that's not uncommon, unfortunately. And like the problem is nobody can see that you're dizzy, right? It's not like you got a cast on because you broke your arm or this kind of thing. Like it's a hidden disorder, and say you're a bit dizzy and you're unsteady, and people just don't know, you think you're just drunk or whatever. So it's kind of like a hidden problem as well.
And I think there's been like some strides in medicine towards, I guess not just medicine, yeah, but in general in healthcare to appreciate some of these conditions and that are not obvious physically, like you mentioned, like a cast or a broken bone or crutches. And sometimes it can be stigmatized, whether it's dizziness or mental health and other kind of things that we might not see, but definitely so much work to be done. We talk about these things, but we really need to make an effort to appreciate how impactful they can be just because we can't see it. So 30 years, yeah, wow.
Yeah, and dizziness obviously has big connections to mental health, anxiety, depression, things like that, because of the effects of dizziness on people's lives, but also people with those kinds of mental health issues are more likely to be dizzy as well. So those two things go hand in hand, and so they just make each other worse. So it's also a big problem.
Right. I guess to jump off of that, in your clinic, you're seeing a lot of people with dizziness. Do you find yourself referring people a lot to other kind of allied healthcare workers to help with that kind of that aspect of things, the emotional or mental health aspect of the condition?
For sure. I mean, the most common allied health professionals we work with are physiotherapists, because a lot of forms of dizziness from various different reasons will respond to vestibular physiotherapy or various kinds of exercises. And then we also work with our audiologists, obviously, who do all our testing for us. And then also we do work sometimes with like psychologists would be the most common form of kind of mental health outreach, because patients often need help managing anxiety or stress, but they may not need medication or a psychiatrist. They just need help talking through strategies, coping strategies, you know, maybe strategies how to manage stress and anxiety, panic attacks, things like that. And that can often be a big problem for their dizziness, and controlling those things can often make them, help them feel a lot better. So that's another kind of area that we often work with.
Okay, I'm glad that there's kind of like a multidisciplinary approach, it seems. Something that Teresa discussed in our episode was the difficulty in receiving a diagnosis for her vertigo. So I guess, can you walk us through what a typical diagnosis process would look like for a patient that might present with dizziness or vertigo?
Yeah, I think the biggest and most important part of diagnosing somebody's dizziness is the history, talking to the patient and learning all the aspects of it. And actually, you know, the patient's description of the sensation is actually not very important at all, whether it's spinning or lightheaded or, you know, feeling dizzy or off balance, or at the end of the day, this is all just English. What matters really is like how long it's been going on for. Is it like attacks or is it all the time? How long are they dizzy for when they have attacks? What things make them dizzy? What are the triggers? What things make it better? And what's the pattern over time? And then other things like headaches and ear symptoms and things like that are all helpful. So it's really about digging into all these aspects of the symptoms. It's not really super important what it feels like. And so I would say if you have the time and, you know, the training to go through a good, thorough, you know, history from a patient, you will come to a short list of diagnoses at the end of that, you know, 90%+ of the time. Sometimes we can't diagnose people. You know, we don't know everything about how the mind works or how the inner ear works. And sometimes patients' problems falls in this small window that we just don't know. But most of the time, we can come up with it, you know, one or two possibilities that we can work on.
I guess from your experience, are there some common like misconceptions about vertigo and dizziness that you see either with your patients or generally in the public that you might be able to debunk?
Yeah, well, that's the one first thing I mentioned, which is actually a misconception even amongst doctors and specialists, is that the word used to describe the dizziness is important, which it is not. And that's something we've been trying to change in our teaching to people like you, medical students, right down to as early a level as we can. We got to stop using this old approach of figuring out what the patient means and then trying to figure it out from that, because at the end of the day, sometimes patients don't know what they mean. And so that's probably the biggest conception across everything, including in healthcare itself. I think the other misconception is that one of the things that I'm trying to address with colleagues and learners, but also by doing talks to the public, like through Ottawa, we have the mini med school series, for example, where we actually give a medical kind of talk to members of the public who are kind of medicine interested, is this issue of headaches. So, you know, headaches is a big reason to be dizzy. And a lot of people have headaches. Some estimates up to 25% of the entire Canadian population will have headaches or migraines, which is a ton of people, if you think about it.
Right.
Millions and millions of people. And the link between headaches and dizziness amongst just general population and in most of medicine is actually poorly known, if thought of at all, and is a definite source of dizziness. And so we're trying to change that right now across the board in medicine, this recognition that headaches and dizziness really do go together. And it's early on in the process now, but that's one big area of misconception is this issue of headaches and dizziness.
So hopefully lots of research to be looking forward to in the future, maybe some more treatment options in terms of managing dizziness once we understand the relation that it might have with headaches, then, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, the problem is that you know, headache itself is a huge area of medicine. And there's a lot of research and new treatments coming out for headache all the time. It's an amazingly advanced area of medical research with a lot of money in it, because there's a lot of medications that the companies make and they make a ton of money off of this. But unfortunately, while they continue to do that for headache patients, they don't really care too much about our dizzy patients. And so trying to get buy-in for people to study that side of the headache problem is has been very difficult so far. But Hopefully, as the trend grows, we'll be able to get more buy-in.
Right. I guess talking about treatment options, can you talk us through maybe just some of the first line types of treatments for things like vestibular migraine, vestibular neuritis, and BPPV? We talked a little bit about this already, and maybe just if how effective they might be in managing these symptoms.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing about needing to come up with a good diagnosis is because the treatment could be very different, right? So, the treatment for benign positional vertigo or BPPV is a specific exercise where you put your head into certain positions because it's just a problem where you need to move these crystals that are in the wrong part of the ear back to the right part of the ear. And so that's a very straightforward thing. And if you have that diagnosis and you do those exercises, most of the time, your problem will just, you are cured. And that's actually one of few things in dizziness medicine that we can actually completely cure. But then if you have a problem like vestibular migraine or migraines, that's very different. Now you need to treat the headaches and treat the dizzy spells using migraine treatments. And there's a lot of different treatments to try, but that is a very different process than somebody who just has BPPV. Some people will have recurring problems over many, many years and require ongoing treatment, whereas some people will just have one spell and that's it, and then physiotherapy is very useful in many different causes of dizziness, maybe also to help people do those exercises for BPPV, but also just to help people compensate for inner ear damage that maybe happened as a result of a stroke or something, or a concussion is a common area where patients often need to do some physiotherapy just to help with some of the dizziness symptoms. So I would say that's probably one of the most common treatments for many different causes of dizziness, which is the vestibular physiotherapy.
So it seems like there's so many different things that can cause dizziness. There's so many different ways to treat it. So would you say this is like one of the biggest challenges that you might face when trying to like diagnose and treat vertigo is just the breadth of it, or are there other challenges that you face in treating vertigo that you might want to talk about?
Yeah, I think like all areas of medicine, there's a wide breadth of possible causes, but 90% of the time, it's the most common things, right? That's why they're most common. So things like BPPV, migraine, these things are very common. On an average day, most of my patients will have these problems. And so, and it becomes very easy to recognize these patients quickly, come up with a diagnosis, and set up a treatment plan. And then occasionally you'll run across one patient who has something that's super rare and that takes longer, or something that's very slow over many years, and so you can't really diagnose it until more things kind of happen, which is always a shame because you don't want those things to happen, but sometimes you can't prevent them from happening. So I would say that the biggest challenge really is that we don't have the research that tells us what to do. And so sometimes you just got to try different things. And it's a frustrating process for the patient. It's frustrating for us trying to treat the patients. You got to do something, give it a couple of months. If it doesn't help, now you're 2 months later, then you're going to try something else. And it may seem to the patient, especially, like they're just constantly trying things that are not working. And that can be very frustrating.
I can only imagine it must seem like a really long process, especially for people who are feeling those symptoms every day, like your patient for 30 years. I can definitely appreciate the frustration, but hopefully, as the research kind of progresses and we start to get more guidelines on how to treat this, can kind of mitigate some of that.
So I had a patient today, for example, who's otherwise healthy and then ends up getting this problem, which means that they're so dizzy they're not able to work. But they only have 4 weeks of sick leave and then they have to apply for disability. And so they were hoping I could give them something that was going to boom, fix it, and they'll be back after a couple of weeks. But unfortunately, I don't have that. And so, trying to adjust your whole life to, now I got to be on disability. How long is it going to take? I don't know. Like the first thing I give you could work in a few months. Maybe it's going to be the second or the third thing. It's really hard for me to answer that question. And so that can be really difficult to deal with just from a day-to-day, from the patient's point of view. Well, what do I do? Like, do I go long term? Like, do I just try and do sick leave? It can be very difficult. Yeah.
I think one of the worst things to deal with in life is uncertainty and trying to plan your whole life based on stuff that you don't know the answer to and nobody can really tell you the answer. I can't even imagine how frustrating that is. And also dealing with, the symptom that's kind of changing your own identity of who you are as a person. You're not able to do a lot of the things that you may identify yourself with and have to shift your whole life around it too. It's a huge, huge burden on your life. I can only imagine.
Like, if you break your arm, you know that in 6 weeks it's going to be good. Your cast is off. You can go back to
Right.
doing this, right? But
Yeah.
a lot of times I can't tell my patients that, right? Like, in 6 weeks, you're going to be good to go. Like, it's not really something a lot of times that we can say. And so that can be really difficult to get through.
Probably a lot of difficult conversations and kind of goal, not goal setting, but managing expectations early on in the interaction.
Yeah, I think that's very important. As a patient asked me, well, when can I go back to work? Well, I'm like, well, I'm not sure, but why don't we set this smaller goal first, and then and see how that goes. And trying to communicate with employers and insurance companies can be very frustrating because they don't really understand business either, right? That whole insurance structure for illness is really set up around physical illness, like broke your arm, 6 weeks, you're going to be back, or that kind of thing. It's not this, how long is this business going to go on? Well, I don't know. So I just have to write, I don't know, on the form. And then the insurance company is like, I don't know what that means. And yeah, it's really difficult.
Yeah, difficult from so many different aspects of life. I guess from a physician's perspective, especially a physician that works specifically with patients who are experiencing dizziness, and now that we've talked a lot about the impact of dizziness outside of physical health, how can other healthcare professionals better support and understand the experience of patients with vertigo or dizziness? And how can we best support, when we come across people who present with dizziness?
Yeah, I think that's that is really an interesting question because, being able if you're having trouble diagnosing the patients, then that's already an area where you need more support, right? And so yes, we have programs like we've set up in Ottawa, but that's maybe the only program like that in the whole country, and very few of these like this in the world. So so that's not really helpful for the vast majority of people. If you happen to live in Ottawa, then you're gonna have a better deal. But I think just for other healthcare professionals, if you do see a lot of patients who have dizziness, is just trying to, just like you would with any other area of medicine where you feel like you don't know too much or that you could do with increased skills, is try and seek out that education. And then the other thing is you will never really understand the impact that a symptom is having on a patient unless you ask about it. And we have wait lists going to 3 and 4 years. We don't have at the time we would like to spend with patients talking about things like that. And make no mistake, we would like to have the time and to talk to patients about these kinds of things, but we just cannot because of the pressures that we face every day. And so that's a big area that I don't really know how to fix that. If you don't have the time to have these conversations, then you never will, and then you'll never know what those true impacts are. And then so one a good example I can give you, I get a lot of forms to fill out for patients, for their employer, for their insurance, disability, the government, VA, whatever, about impacts on their work, what they can do, accommodations that they need. But then when I go to fill out these forms, I realize I actually don't have any idea. Like, I have a general idea of what they do. They work for the government or whatever, but I actually have no idea what exactly they can't or can't do. And these questionnaires are extremely detailed. So that's and then I'm like, well, if I had to, that would require like an extra long consultation just to talk about those things, right? So it's really difficult. So actually, my trick is I get the patient to fill the form out to whatever they feel they need
Right.
to best
Okay.
suit them, because they know better than me. They could spend an hour and tell me what, but they know better than me. And then I just endorse it and support it. So that's my new trick now. Maybe I shouldn't have said that out loud. I don't know. But honestly, like, I don't know what you need accommodation for your job. You know
Yeah,
best. So I'm here to
exactly.
support you and to
Right.
back you up. So you write it down what you need, and I'll just say that that's what you need. And then
Yeah.
you get it.
Right. And like you said, even if we have those extra long conversations with someone, I think at the end of the day, we will never truly understand how it feels to be in someone's shoes who's feeling that every day. So,
Each person would need like a podcast episode, right?
yeah, exactly. Maybe a few. Okay. And then I guess like we talked a lot about how this can be a really frustrating process for patients who are presenting with dizziness from start through trying all of these different types of treatment options and finding one that works. What advice do you have that maybe you can give to patients who are struggling with dizziness or vertigo at like these different stages?
I wish I had really good advice. I think
I
that
know.
the I would really and I just don't have the time or the resources to set this up, but I wish there was good patient support programs or groups out there like they have for many aspects of medicine. So like the psychosocial support program for cancer, for example, is really, really good, right? It's well established, well funded, and every cancer program has such a thing. If we had something similar for our patients, it would be so good because sometimes you know that this problem isn't going to go away, but you just need to maybe talk to other people about it and, you know, and understand the ins and outs and how they've managed it. And that might give you ideas as well. But the one of the problems is you feel very isolated. So, which is ironic because it's such a common problem. To have this feeling of isolation that you're the only person struggling with this problem, which is obviously not true. But if you don't know anybody else, then it becomes very isolating. So if we had some kind of a support program like that, you know, that would be great. So yeah, trying to find something online, you can sometimes find something, but there's a lot of like useless stuff online these days. So you have to be careful about the places that you end up with online, but sometimes you can find good groups online for things like this. And just like I would say for patients with all kinds of illnesses, just advocate for yourself. You know, if you're not getting results in one place, then, you know, keep advocating for yourself. Everybody's busy, but everybody wants to try and help you. And just keep advocating for yourself. And then, yeah, I think those would be my kind of two big pointers.
I think like maybe having focus groups or something where groups of people who experience dizziness or vertigo can kind of sit in a circle, or even if it's online to reach more people, or for those people who might find it difficult to travel to a certain area, at least
Or
to
here's one. You help me spread my message. Think seriously about your headaches. This is from patient advice, right? Think seriously about your headaches. Don't dismiss them. Don't put them off as everybody has headaches because not everybody has headaches. Not everybody's headaches are the same. Your headaches could be a big reason why you're having dizziness, and you got to push your doctors to look at it because doctors think the same. Everybody got headache. Headaches are not important, you know. So.
Yeah, I think like when we hear headaches, at least in medical school, like we're taught about the red flags. And if it's not the red flags, you know, like try the cocktail, like the headache cocktail, and then you don't really think about it after. But like you said, it could be a huge part of why someone's experiencing dizziness. So definitely a good message to be passing around. So everybody listening, make sure that you advocate for yourself and your headaches and take them seriously.
That's right.
Okay, I think that's all the questions that we have for today. So, unless there's anything that you wanted to add, Dr. Che?
No, I think it's great that you're doing this. The podcast focused on the patient experience is something that's really sorely needed. There's a ton of podcasts giving out factual or maybe not so much factual information these days, but a podcast focused more on the patient experience is really a really great idea.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you so much for your time and expertise. Like we talked about, dizziness is so overlooked, and despite its detrimental effect on patients in so many aspects of the biopsychosocial model. So it's very important to have this conversation. And I hope our viewers listening have a greater appreciation of what dizziness can mean for people and how we can best support. someone who's struggling with it. So thanks everyone for tuning in, and see you on the next episode of MedMade Real.